Welcome back in. Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And it has been a wild week in the world of college athletics. And to help us talk more about it, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic. Nicole, how's it going? Thanks for joining us this morning.
Hello. Thanks for having me. Doing well.
Great to have you on with us this morning, Nicole. As I said, it's been a wild week in the world of college athletics. Let's start simply, with your reaction to the Supreme Court case with the NCAA and what you think this now means for the future of college athletics after some pretty strong words for some Supreme Court justices as well.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I mean, I think, I listened to oral arguments, and I think everyone kind of saw that all the justices who spoke had a pretty clear understanding of how the system worked, that they were no longer thinking of college sports as it was in, say, like 1980. They understood the money. They understood the power imbalances. They understood where the money had skyrocketed. And they weren't really just kind of relying on NCAA talking boards. So you're thinking, okay, they really seem to get this. They feel like, you know, they have some messages they want to send to the NCAA, but everyone cautions you not to read too much into the questions that get asked of those things. And so, you know, you're not sure. And, you know, folks that I know who are in, you know, pretty high up in NCAA committee world and have been tracking on this stuff closely, you know, they were thinking, you know, it'll be narrow in some way. And so I think the 9-0, the unanimous decision, was the first real surprise about the whole thing. And then obviously the concurring opinion from Justice Brett Kavanaugh was really what got a lot of people's attention, because the regular opinion, the regular decision was pretty narrow, pretty tempered. It said like, hey, we made this decision, you know, and we're looking at these antitrust laws, and really, really, really narrow. It was saying like, this is the issue at hand. The NCAA courts should not be granting companies, you know, just rights for no reason so that they can have the most profit. And that's kind of as far as that one went. And then Brett Kavanaugh's concurring opinion is the one that, you know, was kind of ricocheting everywhere, where he was basically just saying like, this is this would be illegal if any other business operated this way. And he basically encouraged other people to bring cases against the NCAA, because he kept saying like, their laws, and there's lots of issues with lots of their laws, and we could only get into the one. So I think that was obviously very interesting. It's not binding, but it's certainly a signal of saying like, hey, bring more cases to this court. We would like to hear them, and this is how we feel about the NCAA system violating antitrust law.
I have so many questions for you, Nicole. We do not have time. All right, we could spend hours on this. Well, for one thing, how is Grapevine, Texas? Where the heck is that?
It's literally a hotel connected to the Dallas-Fort Worth airport.
Oh, okay.
So,
all right.
Really,
that
yeah,
makes sense.
Really exciting stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure it was a blast. So, listen, there's so much happening. The playoff stuff, and you're right about all this stuff. You know, you got the playoff stuff, which, you know, may take a little while. Now you have name, image, likeness, six states, you know, July 1, you know, it's going to be a not level playing field, but now there is this temporary measure that you wrote about today. There's just so many different things going on, but let me just go with this. Do you think that, in particular, that opinion from Kavanaugh and what it could mean, is that an existential threat to college athletics, or do you think there is still something that can be done here, or things that can be done here to, I guess, head off just a stream of lawsuits on the way?
Yeah, I think so. That's really what's happening with the name, image, and likeness stuff, is they are going to have to pass something that is very broad and very simple in order to just avoid legal exposure. Like, they don't want to get sued immediately for antitrust issues, right after they just got yelled at for antitrust issues, right after they just got told, hey, you have other issues that are antitrust violations. And this is something also that they had gotten a warning shot letter from the Department of Justice about back in January. So, you know, if you do a temporary thing and you say, hey, we're not going to penalize athletes in any states that do NIL, The athletes in states that have laws, follow those laws, and then schools in states that don't, you know, just set your own policy. It's basically as vague as possible as you could do, but that's the least amount of legal exposure. And so that's why they're going to go that route. And, you know, it certainly seems like that's where we're going. You know, I had gotten that copy of that Emmert memo from yesterday where he basically said, like, we can't do a permanent rule change right now because of the legal environment. So that's why it's going to be something temporary like that, basically lifting the fact that in normal times, those types of actions would make somebody ineligible. So you basically just have to, like, reverse that rule and lift the punishment piece of it.
So long term, when there is a permanent NIL solution, does it have to be extremely more broad and more open? I mean, I know that there's this alternate proposal that Greg Sankey and others have proposed. I mean, it seems to me like it would have to be awfully open, right, to have any chance of not being constantly in court.
Yes. Well, here's the thing. Like, you did this temporary measure. I don't even think you need to go back. I mean, it has a lot of the same principles as the alternate proposal you just mentioned that Greg Sankey was involved in. But you don't have – that was a rule change. And if you're saying you can't do a rule change and you're just going to pass this temporary thing and wait for the federal law to happen at some point, that's all you're really going to do. You don't need to change NCAA legislation if you're waiting for that anyway. So I think that that's really just the path, and then we'll see what the, you know, the bipartisan solution is from the senators and what this is going to look like from a federal government standpoint, because then that also just, you know, that'll supersede all the states, and it'll be a lot more simpler and uniform across all 50 states and every school that makes up the NCAA.
Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Nicole, what do you think this means for the future of the NCAA? We've heard Paul Feinbaum say this is the death of the NCAA as we know it. Others have said, yeah, the NCAA may be in charge of organizing the March Madness tournament and some wrestling tournaments along the way, but largely is about to become useless. What do you think that this means for the future of the NCAA itself?
Well, it's definitely one of those moments where we could be looking back and being like, this was a major, major inflection point, because in essence, it was a kind of a narrow ruling, right? It's basically saying, like, okay, you can't cap the ability to do paid internships and laptops and, like, you know, these very specific but kind of small potatoes issues. But it's everything else that the ruling signaled. It basically blew up a lot of the areas that the NCAA has relied upon for years and years legally. Basically saying that the precedent that they rely on from various other cases, but particularly one sentence in a Board of Regents decision in 84, should not be used as the legal standard, and that they should be subject to antitrust law like everybody else, the, you know, rule of reason, all of this other legal language that everybody else, you know, who potentially is dealing in the antitrust world has to deal with. The NCAA doesn't get special treatment just because, you know, they need ample latitude because people love college sports, and it's its own weird thing. And I feel like, you know, again, even Brett Kavanaugh's opinion, it signals a lot. It's a warning shot. It's saying to bring more cases. It's saying don't use these other things when you're measuring the legality of an NCAA case. And that's directions that he's saying for lower courts. That's, like, he is trying to get this point across that there are other rules that are in violation. They would like to take up. This court would be prepared to take on broader issues, because there's a reason that, like, that was such a narrow — Alston was a very narrow educational-related benefits case, right? And this is him saying, bring us something less narrow. Bring us something where we can blow up the system a bit more, because, again, he said this is labor fixing, price fixing. This is, you know, the same as any other labor issue. This is something that would be illegal in any other industry. He had all these other examples and said that you can't tell people that this product deserves special legal consideration because it caps the salaries of what people could earn, and that you're somehow — you're saying that makes us like the sport better, and that's the only way we'll watch. And they just poke hole after hole after hole in that argument, which has been the NCAA's legal argument for some time. So it's just a really interesting it feels like the jumping off point because of how open they were about like kind of soliciting more cases. But it already has changed this approach to NIL because it could have immediately been sued, right? If you add too many restrictions, and it could have immediately kind of got us back in the courts about these types of issues yet again.
All right, I'm sure you love this, Nicole. I'm gonna throw the 10-year question at you because we know, and you've done a lot of reporting on this. There, by then, there's going to be a 12-team playoff, whether it's in 23, 26. I know, you know, that's still to be determined. There's some sticking points there on when it will happen, but that's happening. But I guess my concern, I mean, all along, it's just been outrageous that the NCAA has tried to fight this. But I look at the Olympics and I say, that's perfect. The Olympics, no one pays them. They are out in the market. They are some of the top athletes in the world that can all go out, get endorsements, get money for training, and benefit from their tremendous skills and work. But it's not, you know, it's not labor management. Do you think 10 years from now this will be more – this will be beyond name, image, likeness, and college athletes being an open market? Are we headed toward that? And if so, can college athletics exist as it does right now?
Well, I think it will exist. I don't think, like, even if you, you know, maybe eventually get to the point where, you know, it's more like a job and their employees and there's an employer-employee relationship and a union, you know, which maybe you get there someday. And I don't think that, you know, is going to change the way that people feel about these things. Like, the Olympics is a good example because when they shifted from a pure amateurism model to sponsorships, endorsements, they can get stipends from, you know, USOC. I don't think anyone stopped watching the Olympics. I don't think anyone felt less attached to Team USA when, you know, the swim meet starts, right? And so I think that you're still going to have the attachments in college sports are so deep because you went there, because you spent 4 years worth of, you know, tuition there. But it's like, you know, or it goes through your family's history and all these things that I just don't think go away if the players on the field are employees, or as we'll see this fall, or if they, you know, can get a couple $1,000 to do a sponsored Instagram post. Like, I think that a lot of those arguments about slippery slope, it won't be recognizable, you know, I don't think for a lot of fans that is going to change how they view this experience at all. And I do think there are subsets of fans that have been, that get uncomfortable watching, you know, these last few 5-10 years. As coaches make $9 million a year and the athletes have not had anything increase in their world of what they're worth, and they see these media rights deals explode, they see the salaries explode, the facilities explode. And so I think, you know, it's a mix, but I feel like there's also a lot of people who work in college sports who want a lot of these things to happen, who want this next evolution of the NCAA to modernize. They want college sports, obviously, to continue to exist, but they want there to be less of a power imbalance. They really believe in the opportunity for athletes to do these sponsorships and endorsements and things. And you know, potentially down the line, you know, maybe it is an employee-employer relationship. Like, there are people who see all of that and they don't think that this is the end of college sports. It may be as we know it, but there is an iteration of it that still exists. And I think to a lot of people and to, you know, there's fans that feel this way too, that it just feels more fair, and they feel less guilty supporting the enterprise because, you know, it has gotten really imbalanced, I would say, in the last 10 years in terms of the money exploding and where the money is going. I think that's changed a lot of people's opinions with this, where, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, maybe the argument of getting a scholarship and then comparing it to a coach's salary and what they bring in wasn't as drastic and felt maybe the scholarship and everything else that went with that maybe felt more commensurate with what, you know, the rest of everybody else was getting, and it didn't feel so disproportionately like you're being exploited.
Yep, very fascinating stuff. Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Nicole, great stuff as always. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning.
Absolutely. Anytime, Joe. Talk to you later.
Absolutely. Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic, our guest here on Robbie and Rexford. When we come back, we'll respond and react a little bit to what Nicole had to say there. What is college sports going to look like in 10 years? Are college athletics as we know it on the verge of ending? We'll talk about that next. This is Robbie and Rexford here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Go to thegamenashville.com to check out Nashville's best deals. Some of the deals happening now include a $50 Bad Axe Throwing Nashville gift card for only $25, a buy one, get one free for Beach Bend's Park and Splash Lagoon, and $20 Grain and Berry gift cards for only $10. Get yours now while they last at thegamenashville.com. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Thanks to Nicole Auerbach for joining us in the last segment. We'll have Tennessee baseball coach Tony Vitello coming up later this hour at 8:45. Joe, what do you make of some of Nicole's comments there about your question specifically of what college athletics will look like in 10 years? Lots of stuff going on right now. College football playoff, the Supreme Court ruling as well. Obviously, name, image, and likeness stuff going on as well this week. It's been a heck of a week here in the world of college athletics. What do you think college sports is going to look like in the next 10 years?
Yeah, well, to Nicole's credit, she didn't really get into that because, I mean, it's so hard. I mean, there's so much happening right now as we speak. It's never been like this in this sport because, again, you think about all the different things. The playoff, which all of a sudden is just going to go to 12. You got the
which they've been full support of the whole time, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, Stuart Mandel on The Athletic has he quotes Gordon Gee. I've that dude has been like Ohio State's president, Vanderbilt. I still can never remember if it's Gee or Gee. It is Gordon Gee. In 2007, he was defending the BCS. This is Gordon Gee, period. This is a quote from him. Quote, "They will wrench a playoff system out of my cold, dead hands." This is what he said Tuesday. I've always been supportive of the playoffs.
Yeah, all right.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. It's awesome. Bill Hancock, who was executive director of the BCS, 2010. This is Stuart Mandel finding these quotes. "We believe a playoff would diminish the regular season and the bowl system, certainly as we know it." Recently, Bill Hancock, 12 teams keep September important, and it also keeps November important. And there will always be a place for bowl games. I mean, look, this is where it's going. I give credit. There are some people, okay, in college athletics. And I think Nicole brought up a great point. Like, there are people here that are like, this is ridiculous. We need to change this. So Jack Swarbrick, AD of Notre Dame, is a guy who's been outspoken on some of this stuff in the past. And so he was talking about the Kavanaugh concurring opinion, and Swarbrick said, quote, "A lot of that language was deserved. I never understood amateurism as a defense. No one ever said, gee, wouldn't this be a better experience for the babysitter if they weren't compensated? There's no inherent value in it, and we just invited that sort of strong reaction." So I think, look, we got a pretty strong consensus that this is right. But the question now is, how does it look? How does it go? What are the unintended consequences? And I am concerned about, like I was saying, I mean, I totally agree with what Nicole is saying. The love for college athletics, man, that's not going to change.
No.
Not going to change at all. People, this is, I mean, look, when you talk about the fabric of this country and sports, to me, it's college football and it's baseball. I mean, those are the two sports. I mean, if you want to go back to that time period, like, you know, horse racing and boxing too, right? But college football and baseball are the longest enduring sports in this country. And the passion, you know, for the name on the front, it's always going to be there. It's a massively, massively profitable product, and it should. That's great. You just got to move things around, and you got to stop restricting people stupidly. But I will say that, like, the Olympic model is exactly what it needs to look like. So 10 years from now, it needs to really just be, whoever you are in college athletics, you're a student, you should be treated just like a student who's not a student athlete, okay? And that's it. And if that's the case, I think everything's going to go on basically. This is going to look, I think, less monumental 10 years from now than it does now. I believe that. But I think the concern, that's where I come in, is if it does get into, see, when you get Congress involved, and you get lawmakers who really, in a lot of cases aren't very familiar with the system. I mean, every few years it's been like, wait a minute, that's tax free money?
Yeah.
Wait, now, how is that? And there's been threats to change that. Again, that is where the non-revenue sports, the opportunities, the entire structure of it is based. Right now, this idea that you can just zap all your programs, you can't do it. It is not, you can't do it, okay? I mean, that's, if the NCAA exists, and it will exist, but yes, it has been made much less powerful. But if that changes, now you'd be talking, minor league sports. And look, maybe it is just like you have your money-making programs and that's that. That would be, to me, a huge shame, because here's the thing. I know it's kind of laughable to talk about a nonprofit organization, but there are thousands of kids who get opportunities because of that, to have some of their school paid for to play softball, to row, to do gymnastics, field hockey, whatever. Go down the list. Soccer. I mean, those opportunities are – that's the balancing point of the nonprofit exemption.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Nate texting in. To Nicole's point about coaches' salaries increasing and player incentives staying the same, I think the players are more valuable than the coaches when it comes to sports like football and basketball. You may say Saban and Coach K are more valuable than any of their players, but if there are no players, those coaches wouldn't have a job.
Yeah, this is, that reminds me of Rick Bird and I went to lunch and I had this idea. Let's have an argument about this, about name, image, likeness and everything, because Rick has not been for it. And it was a good conversation. But one of the points he made was, I mean, put anybody in Kentucky jerseys. You telling me that 20,000 people are going to be in there? And I was like, I agree to a point. Like, if the three of us and Chase went in, you still have to have talent. I mean, people still want to. I mean, this is, yes, loving your school, the name in the front of the jersey. But we're also sports fans who know if something's not good, right? I mean, like, to a point, I think that's like that's the one and done thing. If you took away where Kentucky is getting likely first round picks every year, and you're back to, and then they're going to the pros, and you go back to, yeah, well, okay, Kentucky, they're going to fill Rupp. March Madness will be massively popular still, but there is the Zion example. There are players who also move the needle, and we do like to watch like talent and people who are good at sports to play the sports.
We do.
I mean, there's a line there.
Chris on the text line says, the more and more all this NCAA and paying athletes is brought up, the less and less I hear about the student part of the education. I can see this whole thing with some of the major college sports like football and basketball turning less into a school situation and more into an introductory to professional type league. But the only thing tying these athletes to a school is how much money they can get from the actual school, because if they aren't getting a ton of money from the school, what incentive would they have to even attend school if they can get endorsements to be in another league for a short amount of time before joining the NFL or the NBA or whatever professional league they want to join?
How many people are we talking about here?
Not very many.
I mean, and how much money are we talking about here? Not that much. Yeah, your college education for 90-some percent of these kids will still be more valuable than the $50K you made in endorsements, and that's, I think, high. I mean, this is not – and if you want to talk about education not being valued for college student athletes, let me tell you something. You have not been paying attention to college athletics. And, in fact, I mean, look, I know a lot of coaches don't like all this stuff with the – I mean, they put in all these academic incentives about 15 years ago, right?
Yeah.
They put in where you can get penalized if you don't have a certain level, all this stuff. And a lot of coaches don't like it because it's broad brush and whatever. A kid transfers and you can get penalized. But the bottom line is that was incentive for academics to matter. If you want to go back to like the 80s, the 90s, and some programs where you're talking 0% graduation rates and crap, and just flat out, please come here and somehow we'll keep you eligible and you'll play sports for us. Honestly, it's much better than that in a lot of places, because some people have looked at this and said, gosh, maybe you should also help these kids prepare for their lives and not just use them for 3-4 years to help you win games. I mean, honestly, that's gotten better. It's not going backward because of this.
You know, Butch Jones was very proud of Tennessee's APR rating while he was there.
Well, of course, you have that. You got the losing coach who's like, ah, we got the best GPA. And but listen, I mean, it's funny and it's laughable. And what do we care about? We care about wins and losses. Yep. But honestly, like, no one ever used to talk about team GPA in 1985. I mean, they really didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Kelvin Sampson, when he was at Oklahoma, like, he had a 0% graduation rate for, like, a stretch of time. So it's funny because, look, this is brings it back to what matters, winning. But they have been I'll give the NCAA credit for forcing that to be more part of the discussion because, again, these are people who, like, should be valuing their education and should be preparing for life because almost all of them will not be professional athletes.
So could these changes that are coming about in college athletics be beneficial to local teams here in Tennessee? We'll get to that coming up next. Taking your thoughts as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Right now, though, got to tell you about my friends at FanDuel Sportsbook. And if you've been watching the NBA playoffs from the sidelines, now is the perfect time to get on the action with FanDuel Sportsbook because during the conference finals, new users get 30-1 odds on any team to win their next game. That means you can win $150 on a $5 bet. Conference finals now underway. The Suns, the Clippers, the Hawks, and the Bucks. And there are even more ways to win on FanDuel throughout the playoffs. And when you do win, get your money as a layup. You'll get paid in as little as 24 hours. Plus, the app is so easy to use. So just sign up with promo code ROB to bet the NBA conference finals with 30-1 odds. Once again, that promo code is ROB to unlock 30-1 odds on any playoff team to win their next game exclusively on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. You must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. New users only. Must wagering designated offer market. A $10 first deposit required. $150 max bonus. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Join 102.5 The Game this Saturday from 5 to 7 p.m. for the Nashville SC pre-match party at the Hard Rock Cafe downtown. Party before the game on Broadway and get some game swag. Plus, register to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC home game. Then head over to Nissan Stadium for the 7:30 match. Get your tickets now for Nashville SC at NashvilleSC.com and tune into the game on ESPN 94.9. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're going to have Tennessee baseball coach Tony Vitello joining us here in about 10 minutes or so at 8:45. So looking forward to that conversation coming up with him. Right now talking about the wild week that it's been in the NCAA with the Supreme Court case, name, image, and likeness on the table as well. And the question is, Joe, as you look at the teams here locally, like Tennessee, like Vanderbilt, what does this mean for their future? How can places like Tennessee, and specifically places like Vanderbilt as well, use name, image, and likeness to their advantage, in your opinion?
Well, it's a huge thing that I think every college athletic department is talking about. And even beyond, you know, Vanderbilt and Tennessee, I mean, I know TSU. I mean, I've talked with Penny Collins about this, about,
yep,
you know, the potential here and how it's something that you talk about. With anyone you're recruiting now, like, what are you guys doing? I know talking to Barton Simmons, GM for Vanderbilt football, I mean, certainly they are, you know, they are very intrigued by this, and they know that, like, you've got to be on top of this. David Ubben for us just posted a story about what an official visit is like at Tennessee, and it includes a meeting about name, image, likeness, and, you know, what we're doing for you. Tennessee a year ago signed with a company called, or it's an app. Yeah, it's the company is called Influencer, I-N-F-L-C-R. And this is going back, up and wrote about this like a year ago. And essentially, like, so he had an anecdote here. You know, a Tennessee football player is on the field, and if, like, a USA Today or Getty Images or somebody takes a picture of them, you know, they'll get it like a, they get like a alert on their phone, you know, like, I mean, you have a photo of you out in media or whatever. I mean, like, it's very much like, you know, this and your, these schools, I mean, Tennessee paying about what, $50,000 here for that service to try to help these kids use this. I mean, for people who don't, aren't familiar, like, with what this is, I mean, basically what will be allowed. And some of the question is, like, how open, how free, how capped, how restricted is it? But You know, you're allowed to now, you're going to be allowed to do social media and sponsor your posts, which apparently can be very lucrative.
Oh, yes.
I'm still trying to figure this out. If I can figure out how to make TikTok work for me.
Does this mean we're both going to have to get on TikTok?
I don't know. Snapchat.
Start keeping track of some of this?
Snapchat. Like, you know, my kids say, like, Twitter and Facebook is lame, and it's all about Snapchat and TikTok, which to me both seem stupid, but I don't know. You can make money off those. You can do autograph sales. You got your same kind of thing, YouTube channels, like Twitter. I mean, anything that's sponsored. I mean, there are people out there making money. And if you're like a public figure, an athlete, and you don't have to be the superstar quarterback at Alabama, you know, to, again, there was a piece that we did also on some of the women's basketball top players and just projecting what they would have made this year. And you're talking like six figures in some cases, just off some social media posts. You can do private training lessons. You can, which again, like that's just one of those to me, like in the summer, you're a college athlete. Like right now, my daughter's taking, you know, tennis lessons from a Nolensville High School tennis player, like a college athlete who's really good at a sport. Yeah. Charge a few $100 and help some kids get better. Like,
yeah.
That's obvious. And then obviously like any kind of endorsement deal, you know, merchandise sales. I mean, these things are all obvious, and I know people are going to look at it and say, oh, but here comes the oil baron who's going to pay you $1 million just for you to show up. Okay. Who got hurt? Who got hurt other than the oil baron? If he's throwing millions around at some point, he's going to pay for it because some of these players aren't going to be what he thinks they are. I mean, this is where, and I honestly think, again, not a legal expert, very close to a legal expert, not quite a legal expert.
Pre-law.
Yeah, pre-law and pre-med, I'm still deciding. But to me, the NCAA right now, and I think Greg Sankey is smart here with his second proposal, and he's not the only one, but he and several other commissioners are saying, we can't be this restrictive with the name, image, likeness. We have to open this up. And I think the more open it is, the less likely you're going to have a million lawsuits emerging out of this, as Brett Kavanaugh just invited.
One of the things I wonder about, and this is, I think, something you're just going to have to find a way to deal with, especially if you're a college coach, and that is, look, we see, you know, young players in the NFL, young players in the NHL, young players all throughout sports. They get money for the first time in their lives. They get big money for the first time in their lives. And they either do some stupid stuff with it or they blow it all. Like, how much does money management and educating your players on that and trying to get, you know, we had somebody text in yesterday about, you know, taxes and 1099 forms. Like, at 18 years old, I had no clue what any of that crap was. We didn't learn about that in school. We learned too busy learning about the great skill of algebra in school rather than learning about things, you know, that actually matter at that point. But that's another point.
But you're not bitter.
Not bitter at all. But I do wonder, like, how much time now with some of these college sports programs is going to have to be spent on, like, hey, you guys need to sit down because you have to actually know what you're going to do with some of this money.
Well, I agree. That's a good point. And I'll tell you another thing. I wish a money management course was part of high school for me.
Yeah.
And actually, like, it is for my oldest. I mean, that's a very important thing. And you're right, certainly. 18 years old, I'm trying to think back to 19-year-old me with a whole bunch of money. Ooh, boy.
Could be bad.
Yeah. Now, let's also remember, Terrell Pryor seemed to have a pretty sweet ride driving around Ohio State as a freshman.
Yes,
I mean,
he did.
This isn't completely out of the blue here that some of these young kids who are top college athletes might have a little extra cash.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's the thing. I mean, to me, you bring it above the table, and that's like, great. Now, let's talk about this money. Let's invest this money. Let's work with your mother rather than, ooh, you got that stashed away under the dumpster, right? Like, we can't talk about that. I mean, this is why, like, the reality of the economics here is that there's been money flowing. But I think there should be more, and I think we should see it. And I think that would actually help in what you're talking about because, no question, that's got to be a chunk of this too. But even if it wasn't this, and you're not talking about someone who all of a sudden is running into a lot of money, there's a life skill that, you know. But I mean, some of these kids, I think they're going to have to, if you're making money, you should have a financial planner too at 18. Honestly, wish I had a financial planner like earlier, you know, because like, hey, yeah, don't go out to eat so much. Like, save your money.
I mean, still use that advice. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I'm not saying I listen. But, I mean, I think you're right. There's, I mean, again, and there's other unintended consequences. It's never going to be perfect, but it's definitely better.
When we come back, we'll be joined by Tennessee baseball coach Tony Vitello. Looking forward to that conversation with him. Vols fresh off a trip to Omaha. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.